It's goodbye until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين
the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The top stories: Tehran vehemently denies the entry of Iranian armed forces into ships in the Persian Gulf, warning against fake news spread by some Western and Israeli media. An explosion hits near Afghanistan's defense facility in Kabul hours after a deadly car bomb targeting the capital's diplomatic district. Japan's health minister says coronavirus infections in the country have entered a new phase with a spike in Delta variant cases. Tehran roundly denies the entry of Iranian armed forces into ships in the Persian Gulf or the Sea of Oman. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh also cautioned against fake news spread by some Western and Israeli media. Separately, a spokesman for the Iranian military dismissed anti-Tehran allegations. Brigadier General Abul Fazl Shekarchi said Israel and its allies from the region and beyond are waging a media war against Iran, using psychological warfare and creating pretexts for adventurism. The remarks came after a British maritime trade agency reported a potential hijack of a Panama-flagged vessel off the coast of the UAE. Iran's top military commander says any response to Israeli acts of aggression against the Islamic Republic would be open and forthright.
It goes without saying that the acts of mischief by the Zionist regime will certainly not go unanswered. But if the Islamic Republic does give a response, it will claim responsibility for it with absolute courage and declare it openly.
Bagheri dismissed Israeli, US, and UK allegations that Iran was behind a recent deadly attack on an Israeli-managed vessel off the coast of Oman. He said, whenever Israel suffers a setback, the regime and its allies rush to making accusations against Iran without any proof or investigation. The top Iranian commander stressed that Israel itself is responsible for the consequences of its actions. Bagheri said it is natural that Israel would receive a response from those it has targeted and oppressed. High-ranking foreign officials and dignitaries are arriving in Tehran to attend the swearing-in ceremony of Iran's new president, Ebrahim Raisi. 10 heads of state, 20 parliament speakers, and over 20 ministers will take part in the ceremony. On Thursday, the event will also be attended by officials from 11 international and regional organizations, including the UN, the European Union, OPEC, and the Economic Cooperation Organization. Raisi's swearing-in will be held 2 days after leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, officially endorsed him as Iran's 8th president in a ceremony in Tehran. Iran's new president, Ebrahim Raisi, has made it clear that he would work to remove U.S. sanctions, would not link them to Iranians' livelihoods. Here's more.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has officially endorsed Ebrahim Raisi as the country's new president, who won over 60% of the votes in the June presidential election. In a speech during the ceremony, the leader urged Raisi to rely on domestic capabilities to tackle existing problems. Raisi, who will be inaugurated later this week, takes office at a time the country is grappling with serious economic problems. The government of outgoing President Hassan Rouhani blamed the votes on U.S. sanctions, which were reimposed in 2018. Washington's measure were part of a so-called maximum pressure campaign following its unilateral withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. Since April 2021, Iran and the remaining signatories to the deal have held 6 rounds of talks in Vienna with the aim of reviving the accord under the new U.S. administration of President Joe Biden. But the talks seem to have reached an impasse due to what Tehran sees as excessive demands by Washington and its Western allies. Iran began reducing its JCPOA commitments 1 year after the U.S. withdrawal and in reaction to the failure of the remaining parties to secure its interests under the deal. Tehran has already made it clear that the deal cannot be revived unless Washington removes all sanctions in a verifiable manner and gives assurances that it will not abandon the deal again. Ironically, the U.S. and its Western allies are trying to deviate from the original agreement. They are now insisting that the talks on the JCPOA revival must include Iran's regional influence and its missile program, a demand that the Islamic Republic has rejected. During his endorsement ceremony, Raisi touched upon the policy his government would pursue to deal with the sanctions.
We will certainly pursue the removal of cruel sanctions, but we will definitely not allow the people's livelihoods and the economy to be impacted by it, and we will not link the removal of sanctions to the will of foreigners.
Top officials in the Biden administration, including the Secretary of State, have already admitted that the maximum pressure campaign of the Trump administration, which was aimed at pushing Iran to renegotiate the JCPOA and give in to U.S. demands, has failed. Now, with a new president in Iran who has briefly highlighted his policy in dealing with the U.S. sanctions, it remains to be seen if the United States changes its course or continues to press ahead with its failed pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic.
An explosion has hit near Afghanistan's defense facility in the capital, Kabul. The blast that rocked the area around the National Directorate of Security injured 2 civilians and a security official. It followed a string of deadly bomb attacks close to Kabul's diplomatic district. Afghanistan's defense minister said the coordinated strikes were aimed at him. The interior ministry said those attacks had been repelled and all the attackers had been killed. No militant group has claimed responsibility for the latest series of attacks in Kabul. Well, Thailand has reported a record increase in daily COVID-19 cases. Bangkok said over 20,000 people contracted the disease in the past 24 hours. It brings to over 672,000 the total number of confirmed cases in the country. 5,500 people have also lost their lives since the pandemic began. And Japan Health Minister Norihisa Tamura warned that infections in the country have entered a new phase with a spike in Delta variant cases. He said it is important to act fast and make sure there are sufficient hospital beds for seriously ill patients, he said. By asking people with less serious symptoms to isolate at home, Japan can ensure it does not run out of hospital beds. India reports more than 42,600 new coronavirus infections, pushing the total caseload nearly 32 million. The figure is nearly 40% higher than the previous day. Health authorities say 560 people also succumbed to the disease in the past 24 hours, bringing the total number of fatalities to over 425,000. A number of states, including Mizoram, Karnataka, Puducherry, and Kerala, are among those hit hard by the pandemic. This is while some states are expected to lift the restrictions put in place to curb the outbreak. The number of new coronavirus cases in Turkey jumps to nearly 25,000, the highest level in almost 3 months. Number of deaths from COVID-19 also rose to 126, the most fatalities since June 1st. The country is now facing a new wave of the virus, which has spread since authorities relaxed pandemic-related restrictions. The Turkish health minister has urged people to get vaccinated against the virus. Two-thirds of Turkish adults have received at least one vaccine dose. More than 50,000 people have died from the virus in the country. An independent probe finds that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women.
The investigation found that Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed current and former New York State employees by engaging in unwelcome and non-consensual touching and making numerous offensive comments of a suggestive and sexual nature that created a hostile work environment for women.
The five-month investigation also found that Cuomo and his senior staff took retaliatory action against at least one former employee for coming forward with her story. Recent months, 11 women have accused Cuomo and his staff of misconduct and harassment. The Democratic governor, however, has issued a denial and dismissed calls for his resignation. The White House called the findings abhorrent. U.S. President Joe Biden and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have both called on Cuomo to resign. Our Washington correspondent Colin Campbell says New York Governor Andrew Cuomo may be forced to resign following revelations of his sexual misconduct.
He's definitely embattled, and there are talks that the lieutenant governor will take his place if he should step down or if the Democratic legislature in New York should want him removed. And that's still unsure right now, as of many issues. This is also going to be politicized. If it were up to Republicans, I'm sure he'd be out quite swiftly. But because they're Democrats in the legislature, it may not be as quick. The move to try to force him out may be more glacial, but it may be just as political and advantageous for the lieutenant governor to take his position should he be removed.
Tunisian security forces have arrested two lawmakers opposed to a power grab by President Kais Saied, while rights groups have expressed concern over the arrests. The president says the move is part of his administration's attempt to fight corruption. Amir Bouka is in Tunis.
Few hours after President Kais Saied's decisions were published in the official gazette, Tunisian security forces arrested lawmaker Yassine Ayari to serve a two-month jail term handed down to him by a military court in 2018.
Everyone who erred must be held accountable, but a civilian may not be tried in a military court. Everyone who committed a crime must be arrested regardless of the circumstances of the trial.
Judge Bashir Lakermi was placed under house arrest after being accused of covering up terror-related files, obstructing investigations into them, and violating the law regarding the files of political assassinations. Hours later, security forces raided homes of other lawmakers to implement rulings issued by the military judiciary, including Muhammad Al-Afis, Saifuddin Makhlouf, Abdul Latif Al-Alwi, and Maher Zaid, who was arrested and then released.
May God bless the president. We thank Kais Saied. We thank him for the decisions. Poverty and unemployment have overwhelmed us. I'm a Tunisian woman begging for money to buy medicine, and even my husband's salary has been seized.
About lifting the immunity of the deputies, I neither agree to nor oppose the decision. I support the enforcement of law.
On August 2nd, Tunisian security forces arrested Member of Parliament Faisal Tibini under summons issued by the first instance court in the state of Jandouba. Tibini was charged with spreading false news and offending others through social media. He also faces three other similar charges. Raids and arrested lawmakers to implement rulings issued by the military judiciary have opened the door to accusations against Saied, while leading political parties in Tunisia accuse the president of orchestrating a coup. Rights activists are concerned that the measures could open the door to further violations of citizens' freedoms.
Raids, arrests, and placing a deputy in prison to implement a ruling issued by the military judiciary opened the door to accusations against Saied, leading political parties in Tunisia accuse him of a coup. Amir Bouka, Tunis.
Saudi Arabia has executed another Shia man for taking part in anti-government protests in the country's eastern province. The victim has been identified as Ahmad bin Saeed bin Ali al-Janabi. Saudi authorities said he had taken part in armed rebellion in the city of Qatif but they have published little more on the case. Another Shia man was executed earlier this year in Saudi Arabia on similar charges. In 2011 and 2012, the Arab Kingdom was the scene of widespread protests by the country's Shia minority, which has suffered years of marginalization. The Saudi government handled the uprising with a heavy-handed response. In Indian-administered Kashmir, New Delhi has lifted a three-decade-old ban on the Muharram processions, something the people of Kashmir have always demanded. However, the decision to lift the ban has come at a time when all other social and religious activities have been halted due to the coronavirus pandemic, and this has raised concerns among people. Our correspondent Shahanabad has more.
Since the armed resistance against Indian rule began in Kashmir in 1989, New Delhi imposed a ban on Muharram processions in Indian-administered Kashmir, reasoning these processions might be used by the pro-freedom outfits to instigate the anti-India sentiments. Despite being challenged in the court of law, the ban remained intact. However, in a surprising move, New Delhi's administration this year lifted the ban. But more than appreciation, this decision has received criticism. Aga Said Rahula Mehdi, former member of Kashmir's Legislative Assembly in the past, has often contested the government's ban on Muharram processions. Mehdi says each time security agencies would give negative feedback.
While you have called off Amarnath Yatra, for which you mobilize entire security grid of the nation to enable that, and at the same time you didn't allow the Eid prayers for the last couple of years and this year including. And the best example to give is the Friday prayers at Central Jama Masjid, the central mosque of Grand Old Mosque of Srinagar. And it has been more than 100 Fridays that the prayers were not allowed or not allowed in that mosque. While all this is happening, all of a sudden in isolation, you give a permission to a procession for which you denied the permission for 30 years. So to me, it is more questionable than it answers. And I have suspicions.
Mehdi says this decision by New Delhi has more to do with building a fake narrative and dividing the people of Kashmir on the communal lines.
I do not want the other section of the society to be suspicious about this section of the society, that they have the patronage of New Delhi, that they have the patronage of BJP government. If we suffer through it collectively, if we find ways to fight against it, to come out of it, we find the ways and go on those ways collectively. I do not want to see 10th Muharram procession after the gap of 30 years suddenly come up as a procession not for Imam Hussein but for the narrative building of a fake normalcy for Narendra Modi.
Locals too are apprehensive of this move amid the coronavirus pandemic.
Let them not play politics on this at least. This is a religious matter. If they think that allowing this procession will portray normalcy, they are risking lives. I don't think this was the right time to lift the ban. This simply means they don't care for the people.
After facing huge criticism, the government has revised the decision and passed the ball into the local administration's court. Since the decision of whether the Muharram procession be allowed or not has to be taken by district administrations, it remains to be seen how well they stage and whether people participate or not. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Well, I guess that's it for me for now.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
In the limelight.
Families and friends were overjoyed at London's Heathrow Airport on Monday, 2nd of August, after a travel route change meant they could reunite after 18 months of pandemic separation. "Very, very excited, it means the world," said Sue Blake, as she waited to greet her son, daughter-in-law and grandson, who had flown in from New York, and who she last saw 2 years ago. "It's a big chunk of his life, and I'm so thrilled for him that he can come here," she said of the 8-year-old. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Reuters News Agency journalists Guy Falconbridge, Ben Macquarie, and Sarah Young. The piece is titled, "It Means the World. Families and Friends Reunite at UK's Heathrow." Stay with us for more. Families and friends were overjoyed at London's Heathrow Airport on Monday, 2nd of August, after a travel route change meant they could reunite after 18 months of pandemic separation. "Very, very excited, it means the world," said Sue Blake, as she waited to greet her son, daughter-in-law, and grandson, who had flown in from New York and who she last saw 2 years ago. "It's a big chunk of his life, and I'm so thrilled for him that he can come here," she said of her 8-year-old grandson. Watching the hugs and tears in the arrivals hall, Heathrow Airport's boss urged Britain to remove barriers to travel, not add to them, amid speculation that the government was poised to impose more rules. "Let's just make it easier now for people to travel," Heathrow Airport's chief executive, John Holland Kay, told Reuters. Britain, where the death toll from the coronavirus pandemic has nearly reached 130,000, reopened its borders to large parts of the world on Monday, scrapping quarantine for fully vaccinated arrivals from the European Union, excluding France and the United States. The reopening of the borders was welcomed by families divided by the pandemic and airlines strained by it. "It is really awesome," said 31-year-old medical writer Colleen Castro after collecting her luggage. She and her husband had come to London to deliver some happy news to his parents. "It's been a really long time, and actually I'm pregnant with my in-law's first grandchild, so it's really exciting to finally be able to be here and share that news with them." For travellers from Britain's closest neighbour, France, who must still quarantine on arrival in Britain due to London's concern over COVID-19, the opening up for other countries stung. "It's a bit scandalous for the French," said Alain Jourdain, just before he boarded a Eurostar train from Paris to London, where he will need to spend 10 days in isolation in order to see his children. He last saw them back in 2019. "It is very complicated, in particular all the paperwork to fill for the UK government. And it could get even more complicated. The travel industry now faces a new headache, with the government set to issue a COVID-19 warning against holidays to Spain, according to the Times newspaper. "We just need to keep things simple. We need to build confidence in travel," Heathrow's chief executive, John Holland Kay, said when asked about the reports of another rule change. Britain has one of the fastest vaccination programs in the world, but the government has prevented the travel industry from bouncing back because of its maze of rules and track record for making last-minute changes. Spain could go on a new category of risk, the Amber Watch List, meaning it could be upgraded to red at short notice, with arrivals from Spain having to quarantine in hotels. Meanwhile, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Monday, 2nd of August, that he wanted to get the travel industry moving again, with a simple user-friendly system to allow for trips abroad without importing new variants of the coronavirus.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Communique.
over 24 news outlets, including Press TV, had their .com domains seized and were completely taken offline. So why these websites? What do the vast majority of these news outlets have in common? Why were they targeted by the United States? And what does that say about a country that claims to champion so-called democracy and freedom of the press? I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. On June 23rd, 2021, the United States government seized the websites of several news broadcasters and media outlets belonging to Iran and its allies in one fell swoop. The websites targeted included Palestine Today, as well as Iran's Al Alam, which is an Arabic language broadcaster. They included Iraq's Al Furat and Yemen's Al Masira, just to name a few of the 33 outlets seized by the U.S. Among them was also this network, Press TV, where I myself have been proud to host my television program, The Communique, since late 2020. Anyone attempting to access PressTV.com is now met with a sign that reads, "This website has been seized," bearing the daunting seal of the U.S. Department of Justice and Department of Commerce. It's important to understand the U.S. government didn't just block these news sites inside the United States or in its own borders. It blocked them worldwide for everyone, rendering them inaccessible after seizing their .com domains. And of course, when we say seized, that's a nice way of saying stolen. This act here is very reminiscent of how the U.S. has also seized Iranian oil and sold it off like pirates, or seized Venezuela's gold, or seized Syria's oil fields. This is criminal behavior. It's piracy on the state level. Now, the next day, a statement was released by the U.S. Department of Justice confirming the seizure of not just Press TV's website, but a total of 33 outlets. That's 33 news sites who all had their websites taken down the same day. So the question here is, what do all these channels have in common? They're Muslim, they're Arabic, they're Persian, they're anti-imperialist, and they form part of the axis of resistance. To try and justify this blatant act of theft and suppression of the media, Joe Biden used the United States emergency laws. Yes, you heard that correctly. Joe Biden declared a national emergency under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which allows him to designate a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States. Apparently, this television program and the programs and works of my colleagues are so upsetting that the U.S. feels the need to go activate its emergency laws just to silence us for speaking the truth. What the U.S. is doing here is outrageous. It's accusing foreign news outlets of being run by Iran's elite special forces and then using national emergency laws to silence them and calling that counterterrorism. The DOJ statement refers to sanctions imposed on Iran by former U.S. President Donald Trump in October 2020. Those sanctions specifically target the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, and the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union, IRTVU. And if you look at what they say, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, claims absurdly and without any evidence that these news outlets are, quote, owned or controlled by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, and also, quote, disguised as news organizations or media outlets targeting the United States with disinformation campaigns and malign influence operations. So they're making this outrageous claim that Press TV and other outlets are being run by the IRGC, and more specifically, the Quds Force. Now, as some of you may know, the Quds Force is an elite branch of the IRGC. It was formerly headed by General Qasem Soleimani. Donald Trump murdered Haj Qasem and Abu Mahdi in January 2020. They were an incremental part in helping defeat Al-Qaeda and defeat Daesh in Syria and Iraq. Undoubtedly, the Quds Force plays a crucial role in the resistance front, but to claim that it's running these news outlets, this is absurd. Just to give you context, that's like saying that CNN is being run by the Navy SEALs or Delta Force. It's just not true. It doesn't make any sense. Now, typically, all websites that end in .com are managed by an American company called VeriSign. And apparently, because these news sites did not obtain a sanctions exemption, the U.S. thinks that it has the right to just shut them down. The United States claims jurisdiction over .com domains and has used that claim in the past to sue people overseas. But let's be clear here. This has nothing to do with sanctions exemptions or .com domains. First of all, the United States would have never even given a sanctions exemption in the first place, because these outlets tell the truth about foreign policy and about the United States and Israel and Great Britain. Second of all, if this was just about domains, why didn't the U.S. government go and shut down every single domain that is remotely connected to the IRGC or IRTVU? They didn't, because their goal here was to attack the media and shut down outlets that they don't like. This is an attack on the press. You can see clearly how there's practically no difference between Trump and Biden. Both of them make ridiculous accusations that these outlets are somehow running disinformation campaigns and being run by elite special forces. And then Biden goes ahead and uses sanctions that Trump created against Iran to seize the websites of Iranian broadcasters. The allegations leveled against them by the U.S. that they spread disinformation, they're no different from the ones that fueled the Russiagate scandal during the last 4 years. They're unproven. You might recall that Trump was heavily criticized by Democrats and the media for his, quote, unprecedented use and abuse of emergency powers and executive orders. He even declared a national emergency so he could secure funding for his border wall. Many, including Joe Biden, called Trump an existential threat and called him out for attacking the media. All right, so where's the accountability for Biden now that he is the president and he is abusing emergency powers to attack and silence the press? Where are all these Biden voters who claim that democracy was on the ballot and that fascism had to be voted out? Well, what do you call this? What do you call this attack on the media? How do you rationalize this behavior, accusing foreign journalists of being spies or special forces and then taking their sites down in the name of counterterrorism? Apparently, they don't seem to care much about authoritarianism under Biden. They don't mind it at all, because when the blue fascist attacks the press, then it's okay for them. Let's be clear about what this means here. By shutting down Press TV, the United States has decided, of its own accord, that 1.4 billion English-speaking people on the planet are no longer allowed to watch and listen to news that exposes imperialism and Zionism. This is way more than just authoritarianism. It would already be scandalous enough if the U.S. was blocking Press TV within its own borders, something it was already doing in many ways. But now the U.S. is deciding for the whole world what news they can consume and what foreign journalists can say. And equally, by abruptly shutting down broadcasters like Al Furat and Al Alam, along with others, they have created a huge vacuum in Arabic language media. When I began my career in journalism, this was late 2019, early 2020, on my YouTube channel and Twitter. I was very fortunate and blessed, alhamdulillah, to grow quickly and successfully, and I was offered my own television program right here on Press TV in the fall of 2020. But you see, I'm not from America. I don't work in America. Press TV is not based in America. So what gives the United States the right to seize my work and all the tireless work of my colleagues and just take it offline? What kind of behavior is that? For me, that's almost an entire year of weekly television broadcasts and episodes that I produced all gone. For others at Press TV and other outlets, it's even more. Now, thankfully, you can still access Press TV at our new domain. It's presstv.ir. But were it not for this backup, many of us would have lost all our work. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Now joining me from Tehran is American journalist, filmmaker, and host for Press TV, my wonderful colleague, Marcy Hashemi. Thank you so much for coming on the program. It's really great to have you, Marcy.
Hi, Richard. It's my pleasure to be with you. And you're doing a great job, by the way.
So I wanted to start out with this outrageous assault on the press from the other day when the United States took down Press TV's website and a bunch of other outlets as well. You know, I just wanted to ask you, first of all, what was going through your head? Like, what was your initial reaction? All this work, all these efforts that you and all our other colleagues have made just suddenly vanished and deleted off the internet.
Well, you know, Richard, unfortunately, I really wasn't surprised because we have seen so many assaults by various Western governments against Press TV. We have seen years ago, of course, in the early days of Press TV, we saw the satellites, the various satellites not allowing Press TV to be broadcast from them. We have seen, of course, like in the United States, we're never allowed on cable television. And in more recent years, we have seen the continual attacks on our social media, YouTube being blocked, so many different attacks. But this time around, perhaps I'm a little surprised, if I want to say anything, that it says how effective that we have been, how threatened they are by us, that they would actually seize the website. I mean, you know, Richard, before the U.S. was a little bit smoother with its censorship, with how it controls scenarios, but now we're just seeing outright attacks, and they're not even trying to hide their animosity and disdain anymore. And let me say, and lack of fair play, and lack of believing in free speech and freedom of the press.
Yeah, I absolutely share your sentiment. And, you know, this is not the first time, obviously, that they've gone after Press TV. It's not just the website, it's also the social media pages. And I think you yourself have also been subjected to extremely cruel, inhumane treatment from the U.S. government. Could you maybe give the viewers an idea how far back this goes and why, even though we're angry, we're not surprised?
Right, yes, of course, I have had my own experience. It's 2 years ago, of course, being arrested in the U.S. And, you know, it's really interesting because after they arrested me and were asking questions about Press TV, it was mind-boggling for me as an American citizen in the United States, in the capital of the U.S., in Washington, D.C., that what was most important for them was why Press TV covered Israel in the way that it does. Asking several questions about basically why we don't show what they call the real perspective about Israel, why do we have negative coverage when it comes to Israel. What I found mind-boggling about that is that they asked me more questions about Press TV's coverage of Israel than Press TV's coverage of the United States, and I think that that says a lot. It's unfortunately the whole Zionist-controlled media right now in the U.S., and I will say Zionist-controlled government. And this is a big part of what is going on with us right now, let me say, because I really feel that the role that we've just played and other entities that have been seized by the United States, the role that was played in the most recent 11-day onslaught by the Israelis on the Gaza Strip, again, providing that alternative perspective. And of course, with social media now, you know, we had people, regular people in Sheikh Jarrah, in Gaza, at Al-Aqsa, and sending those videos and uploading it to social media. So then they no longer can control the narrative. And that's very difficult for them because they never play fairly. They at least though try to have that monopoly on it. And when they no longer can monopolize the narrative, that's when the situation will get really sticky and they will really play dirty, as we have seen with the seizure of our website and others. Well, of course, it was not the first time. It won't be the last time. But I think it says a lot. And I think really we actually all should sort of be proud that perhaps we're more effective than even we imagine ourselves, because, of course, we have lots of limitations because of the overall situation and being sanctioned. But at the same time, that they felt it was necessary to siege the website, I think that says a lot about how effective we have been. As I said earlier, it's not the first time, and I don't think that it will be the last time. And they will continually try to silence this resistance camp because actually we're showing an alternative perspective, the real perspective, with so many stories that before they had a monopoly on the narrative. So this is very difficult for them that they no longer have that monopoly. We have seen throughout the years various ways that the mainstream media tried to deal with that alternative perspective. And we have seen even, of course, unfortunately, sometimes them creating their own stories, their own scenarios, whether we're talking about in Iraq, 2003 leading up to that invasion by the U.S., or we're talking about even something like Duma, Syria, and we saw the whole thing that they created news. So, yeah, this is nothing new, and it's not going to stop, I'm sure.
Why do you think they decided to do this now. I've heard people speculate that perhaps this was in part due to the recent shift in public opinion in favor of Palestine, specifically after this onslaught against Gaza that we just saw in May. And of course, Press TV played a huge role in actually reporting about that accurately and truthfully. Do you think this shift in public opinion on the Israelis maybe played a small role? Because at the same time, as you mentioned, it does go a long way back. I also wanted to ask you, and I know this is kind of a rhetorical question, but are you surprised by the silence in the mainstream media, even in independent media, right? There are a lot of these so-called lefties who've said nothing at all.
Yeah, that's, you know, the unfortunate situation that we face, Richard, isn't it? That the so-called liberals definitely totally silent. When it comes to neoliberalism, I mean, because that's the real thing that we're talking about, really, and serving the 1%, right? When it comes to that, unfortunately, we don't see much of a difference between what is called the mainstream media and the so-called liberal media. Because, as we know, for example, we're talking about the United States, it really doesn't matter if there is an administration that is Democratic or Republican. Basically, they're serving the same elite and the 1%. And that's what we're looking at. You know, on the one hand, they want to call themselves liberal and open and woke. On the other hand, they remain silent when this obvious attack on liberties. The country that so, you know, really always talks about freedom of speech and freedom of the press and attacks so many countries for saying that they don't have it, we see what they have done and what they're doing. And it is absolutely amazing the silence that we're seeing coming from the mainstream media and the so-called liberal media. But again, unfortunately, we're not surprised because it's definitely not the first time that we've seen this.
We didn't only see Press TV being taken down. We also saw Al Furat, Al Masira. We saw 33 channels in total, all of them not just Iranian, some Yemeni, you know, Iraqi. So, I mean, what do these outlets have in common, though? Why were they targeted all together at once? What's the takeaway here?
Well, I think, what they have in common, that they basically, it's anti-hegemonic policies. We are seeing a full-force attack on the resistance front, and that's obvious because the resistance front has been effective. I think that we are seeing the United States and their Western allies, and even perhaps some of their regional allies, reeling from losses. I mean, whether we're talking about, for example, the Daesh project was a major project, and it failed for the most part in Syria and in Iraq. And why did it fail? Because of resistance. And the media connected with, for example, resistance, whether we're talking about in Iraq or whether we're talking about in Syria, whether we're talking about in Palestine or Yemen, or the Islamic Republic of Iran, standing up against these hegemonic and demonic policies that they have tried to implement. So again, wanting to control the narrative and no longer being able to do that. We look at what is going on in Yemen, the amount of the type of weapons and equipment that have been sold to Saudi Arabia by the United States, by the UK, and of course their support for the Saudi regime in their onslaught on the Yemeni people. And yet we have seen unbelievable advances on the ground by freedom fighters, the Yemeni people. And of course, being that the media connected with that, trying to show the reality, again, they don't want the other side, the reality of that narrative, to be shown. As I said, you know, we've seen this a lot. We have seen this a lot, and this is why we're going to continue to see the attacks that we have, and at the same time, we're going to continue doing what we do.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's horrific what's happening in Yemen. And, you know, just to wrap up, Marcy, I see the United States just yesterday complaining that media outlets have been censored in Hong Kong, and they point the finger at China and Russia and Iran and a host of other countries, calling them authoritarian. But, I mean, what they've done now, the U.S. just taking down the websites, shutting down 33 foreign news outlets, I mean, is that not clearly an attack on the press? I don't think I could ever listen. I already couldn't ever listen again to another Western country lecturing about press freedoms. Can you, can anyone?
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't been able to for a long time, Richard. My experience with the Western press goes way back. Of course, I was an American-educated journalist, universities in the United States. So I've learned early about the techniques that they use, but let me just say, there's been a major deterioration in the United States dealing with the press. At one time, we really did have more of an independent press. I mean, we can look at history and see, for example, during the Vietnam War, one of the main catalysts for people taking to the streets mass demonstrations and protests were the body bags, the number of body bags, coffins that were coming back to the United States, the number of American soldiers who had been killed. And we know that, for example, in 2003, with the start of the U.S. Invasion of Iraq, that they made it illegal for journalists to take photographs, to take pictures or videos and show the body bag. So I think we're seeing a very, very different reality on the ground of journalists now, journalism now there. Post-2001, is a totally different world in the world of journalism in the West. And unfortunately, it has gotten so authoritarian as far as the government itself, and it's trying to control alternative narratives. So yes, we have seen definite deterioration. And yeah, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. So, you know, they're pointing the finger at Hong Kong or China or Iran. And really, it is unbelievable the techniques that they are using to control the narrative. And I ask anyone, I mean, if it was something that, for example, the opposite had happened, like in China or in Iran, that they had totally sieged a foreign website, and what would be the reaction? So, yes, we're continually seeing this hypocrisy coming out of Washington and coming from the mainstream media, but as I said earlier, we will continue doing what we do and hopefully being the voice of the voiceless.
We constantly hear Britain and America and their allies whining and complaining about China, about Russia, about Iran, accusing them of being authoritarian and attacking the press. Every day, some Western reporter thinks they're very tough for yelling Navalny's name at Russian President Putin. But of course, not a word about Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, journalist whose extradition hearing I covered. They say nothing about Assange, who Trump and now Biden are trying to extradite to the U.S., threatening him with 175 years in jail as he's locked in a maximum security prison in London. Just imagine for a second if Iran had gone and permanently seized the websites of Western outlets like the BBC or CNN. Just imagine the outrage that would ensue. So where is the outrage now when the United States shuts down 33 foreign news sites? Where is the outrage at this violent behavior, this criminal attack against the press? How do people just let the U.S. get away with this outrageous behavior, purposely going and silencing adversarial outlets that are not even inside the U.S.? Of course, the media says nothing. Of course. And even many in the so-called American left, in independent media, will say nothing because they're afraid to defend Arabic, Persian, and Muslim outlets, or what Israeli media laughably calls pro-Hamas outlets, as if that's all they are. These so-called leftists and defenders of free speech have vanished. They have nothing to say all of a sudden about Biden using emergency laws to shut down foreign media outlets like some dictator. When it comes to imperialism, you really get to see their true colors. You really get to see where they stand. What the U.S. has done here against Press TV and other outlets is outrageous and despicable. It's an attack on the press. It's an attack on foreign journalists. Let's be unequivocal about that. This is an extraterritorialization of U.S. law and authoritarianism. But you know, at the very least, it shows, it proves that our work is effective and important, and that they are afraid of us because we speak the truth. And if they want to come and call journalists a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat, because we stand up for Palestinians and we expose the true nature of America's foreign policy, then we'll take that as a badge of honor. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
In the limelight.
Seven new large fires were reported on Sunday, August 2nd, bringing the total number of wildfires raging in the United States to 91, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, NIFC. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written jointly by Amir Vira and Dina Hackney, reporters. This article is published under the heading 91 wildfires are burning across U.S., with Oregon's bootleg fire growing to over 400,000 acres. Stay tuned for more. Seven new large fires were reported on Sunday, August 2nd, bringing the total number of wildfires raging in the United States to 91, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, NIFC. More than 1.8 million acres have burned since these fires began, the NIFC said. More than 22,300 wildland firefighters and incident management teams are involved in battling the blazes. This year, 37,803 fires have burned more than 3 million acres across the United States, per NIFC. During the same period in 2020, 32,059 fires burned a total of 2.1 million acres. As hot temperatures and very dry vegetation persist, it is important to stay informed on current and predicted environmental conditions, NIFC said in its Sunday, August 2nd update. Check for fire restrictions and closures before you head out to enjoy your public lands. Now more than ever, we need your help to prevent wildfires, they said. Idaho is the state with the biggest number of large fires at 23. However, Oregon has the most acres burned, 554,587 among its 11 fires. The Bootleg Fire near the California border is alone responsible for burning 413,734 acres. The Bootleg Fire is currently at 74% containment and isn't expected to be fully contained until October 1st, according to NCWEB, the conglomerate for fire information in the U.S. The Dixie Fire in California has reached 244,888 acres in size and is 32% contained, according to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. A total of 67 structures have been destroyed due to the Dixie Fire, and an evacuation order remains in place for the Boot Meadows, Jonesville, and Lake Philbrook areas. There have been no fatalities reported at this time. The Tamarack Fire, which is burning south of Lake Tahoe, is now 84% contained, according to NCWEB. It began on July 4th due to a lightning strike, and most evacuation orders for the area have now been lifted. Wildfires aren't just affecting the mainland U.S. The Mauna Road Fire on northern side of Hawaii's Big Island led to the evacuation of more than 7,000 people, according to County of Hawaii's Communications Director Cyrus Johnson. The fire has scorched more than 40,000 acres since it started recently. So far, two homes have been destroyed, Johnson told CNN by phone. Monsoon season has arrived in the West, bringing with it mudslides, flash flooding, and dust storms. The monsoon moisture moving into the region could potentially stomp out some fires and quench the dry vegetation and soil, but it could also cause more dangerous conditions. Lightning and high fire danger will likely result in new fire starts. Gusty thunderstorm winds could contribute to fire spread. Despite rainfall, initial attack resources could be overwhelmed and cold over fires are possible, said the National Weather Service office in Medford, Oregon. Red flag warnings are in place across central and eastern Oregon for the weekend, where the potential for thunderstorms has drawn out worries for more fire starts. With the Bootleg fire already blistering over 400,000 acres of the Oregon hills, lightning and strong winds from monsoon thunderstorms could start more fires, further straining resources.